Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
DJ, spin this!
With all due respect, and remember, I'm saying with all due respect.
Here with Nick Wilson. I am America's sports talk show host. Mm-hmm. Hear me roar.
Stan Norfleet here.
Hey, it was just a misunderstanding.
No, it ain't.
Oh, bleep you. Get off my...
Bye, Gomez.
Bye, Gomez, right. Both of you.
Do I detect some kind of sarcasm here?
Never.
OFNC, Nick Wilson in the show is back. Happy Tuesday, y'all. Hope you enjoy the frigid weather. I am not. I am in my room, nestled? Something like that. I'm either nuzzled or nestled. And getting ready for another great show today. 4 hours of nonstop sports talk. It might stop here or there for a sidebar, too. But we've got Brennan Marks of The Athletic, Carolina and Duke men's basketball reporter. He's going to join us to also talk about another story he's been covering, Sam Howell heading off into the NFL draft. We've got Ira Kaufman of JoeBucksFan.com, Hall of Fame representative, all around living legend of Tampa Bay media, to talk the Antonio Brown saga and get you guys ready for Panthers and Buccaneers, the season finale. I absolutely hate when we can't celebrate a season finale, when we have to dread a season finale. But here we are with the Carolina Panthers rounding out year two of Matt Rhule. But hi, hey there, ho there. Itty bitty fitty back in the studio holding things down. I think we're probably going to get to the quarterback big board as well. We got two more names to enter the quarterback big board. But yet, I want to make one thing perfectly clear. Because I realize that it is very easy to take the frustration and annoyance of what is going on with the Carolina Panthers and spread it everywhere across the board, right? If you're a Panthers fan, I understand if you're also bleeping all over NC State, if that's where you went. Or if you're a Panthers fan and you're frustrated at UNC basketball, even though they're coming off one of their best performances of the season, I get it. I do understand the impulse to take that and spread it everywhere else, to allow the negativity to manifest itself. But I just would like to say, because this is going to be a battle all season long with our patience with a very young Hornets team, let's all do what Aaron Rodgers said. No, not lie about our vaccination status. No, let's all R-E-L-A-X on the Charlotte Hornets. I'm not telling you that we have to enjoy what we saw last night, which was not getting calls in the first quarter and James Borrego losing his mind and the refs telling him, a bagoma to you, sir. No. I'm not telling you you're wrong to be frustrated about that, or quite frankly, what happened in the fourth quarter in a game that they could have and should have won despite not getting the calls that Washington was getting. But the Panthers and Hornets are in two diametrically opposite situations. Even though the Hornets have lost two games, one on Sunday against Phoenix in a game that should have been a lot more competitive. And it came in front of a home audience, which is a rare misstep for this team at home. They've been really good at home. They have put on a great product for you, the fans, at the Spectrum Center. And then last night, a frustrating close loss to the Washington Wizards, 124-121, even though they led halfway through the fourth quarter. They got back into that game. They had a great second half. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough to win that game. But the Hornets and Panthers don't belong in the same conversation, because the Charlotte Hornets have shown you time and time again that they can draft well and develop well. They're not ready for prime time yet. It's apparent. They got some bad habits they got to figure out, and we'll get to those in just a moment here. But this idea that we can allow our Panthers' frustration in an organization who is not drafted well, in an organization who has not developed well, or at least we don't have sturdy evidence of it to this point. The Panthers are the second-class citizens of Charlotte sports right now, and they should be. That's where Dave Tepper's decisions have led them. That's where Matt Rhule's decision, whether it's at the quarterback position, what they've done with the offensive line, how they've attacked building this team, individual game decisions. That's where it has led the Carolina Panthers. And the Charlotte Hornets are still the toast of town, and should be. Was last night frustrating? You bet your sweet Bippy. I got to be honest with you. I would have loved to see Borrego get tossed in that game. I thought Coach Borrego, early in this game, when he got teed up, I thought it was ridiculous they teed him up. I thought he had a very valid complaint that his team was not getting the same calls as the Washington Wizards, a team who, by the way, this isn't as if you're playing the Lakers and LeBron gets a bunch of calls. This isn't Kevin Durant getting all the different kind of calls that Kevin Durant gets, or James Harden because he's James Harden and a former NBA MVP. No, you got guys like Kyle Kuzma getting calls last night. Bradley Beal's a great player. Bradley Beal got a lot of friendly calls last night. Can the Hornets do things better? Yes, but I would have liked to see Borrego, for once, get tossed in this game to make a point. And there is something, like, let's be honest, guys. I saw an NBA report within the last week that over a third of NBA officials are in the COVID protocols. So it's not as if night in, night out, you're dealing with the best of the best. But I think the Hornets needed to make a stand last night. They've not gotten calls all year. They haven't done much with the ones that they have. I think they're 29th in free throws. But I would have liked to see Borrego get run in that game. It's not his style, so I can't really critique a man for sticking with his style that has worked to this point. But I was hot about the way the whistles were going. And by the way, it's not just any whistle. It's the whistle at the rim. It's the whistle with guys driving to the rim. But I do think the Hornets have developed a reputation. I think feeding into the Hornets' reputation is that they're a three-happy team. They took 38 threes last night. They made 37% of them. But I don't think it's just that. I think their reputation is part of it. I also am going to say, LaMelo and Terry don't go to the rim enough. How many times last night did we see LaMelo get within 2 to 3 feet of the rim and settle for that little bunny? Settle for that little floater. Terry, I think, goes up a little bit more consistently to the rim. And by the way, not necessarily one of the most prolific finishers in the NBA. He goes up a little bit more regularity. I think he could go even more. Last night, Terry and LaMelo got to the free throw line 4 times. Did the Hornets get jobbed a little bit last night by the referees? Yeah, that's the kind of thing, that's the kind of night that is frustrating. But it's been a consistent pattern. Some of it is, we got slappy referees out there. Some of this is that quite frankly, the Hornets' style of play is held against them. In a way, I don't remember Golden State's three-point happy style being held against them, but I digress. And some of it is, when you're not getting the calls, be it LaMelo, be it Miles, be it Terry Rozier, either your two best guards or your best dunker needs to make it a point. Because there were opportunities at the rim in this game. But this loss isn't like any other loss for the Charlotte Hornets. This was kind of one of those rare losses. This isn't just the other team made a bunch of threes. This isn't perimeter defense just specifically breaks down across 4 quarters. This is a loss that has happened about once every couple weeks where they're not getting free throw calls. They're doing a decent job shooting, but they're not shooting 40% or 42%. And then everything just kind of adds up. This was not the night before where you just didn't play hard enough against Phoenix. So I've seen just this lump in, this Panthers frustration bleed over the Hornets. There are frustrations to the Charlotte Hornets. But I think our biggest frustration is they're still young. And when I say they're still young, I mean they're making mistakes of the youth. They're, I don't want to say refusal, but the night in, night out, are they going to play 100%? Some of the silly mistakes in transition or with turnovers. LaMelo's had his battles with turnovers this year. The Panthers are not coached well, and they might not be talented enough where it matters most, on the offensive line and the quarterback position. The Charlotte Hornets are learning. They're more than talented enough to be a top six seed in the Eastern Conference, but this isn't just now you have talent, so you're going to be a top six seed. You've got to learn how to win in the NBA. And that process isn't overnight. And as much as we want to fast track, and as much as a move for like a Miles Bridges would help, as much as any move to protect the rim would help a team that is three-point happy and, you know, getting a big who can get out and transition, all that stuff, as much as that would help, it's not going to solve what I think is the biggest deal of all of this, which is they're really young. They're the fifth youngest team in the NBA. That's not an excuse. It's a fact. Young teams make mistakes. Miles Bridges might be in year four. He's still learning to be a night-in, night-out, consistent impact player. LaMelo Ball. Man, there are some real learning curves we got to get to with LaMelo in this season. But, I mean, even Gordon and Terry, they're learning what their roles are as LaMelo and Miles and McDaniels and Martin and Kelly Oubre and all these young guys start to ascend around them. It's easy when you don't have enough talent to slack off in the NBA. Because you play hard every night. This was who the Hornets were last year. You catch everybody surprised because you play hard every single night. The Hornets finally have enough talent. Which brings me to the number one thing I am hot about from last night. They didn't lose because of the free throw discrepancy. They didn't lose because Terry this, LaMelo that, Gordon this, Miles that, Mason this, Cody that. They lost because their perimeter defense late in that game sucked. It sucked. And I count this up to playing a young, raw distributor on the perimeter in LaMelo Ball. How many times did you see the defense break down and collapse on an extra pass and Kyle Kuzma was wide open? Or Bradley Beal was wide open? Or really any of the guys who hit shots last night? Davis Bertans, wide open. That is the part of the loss that actually does irk me. Because that's effort. That's focus. But it's also part of LaMelo's learning curve. LaMelo defensively has to be on the court to really learn through those experiences, learn through the pain in the fourth quarter. And I think the Hornets are doing the right thing. It sucks the result is this sometimes, but it's the only way he's going to maximize his ceiling as soon as humanly possible. 704-570-9610. Want to hear from you guys on the text line today or at Nick Wilson says, who has to get to the rim when the Hornets aren't getting the calls? I would put that on LaMelo and Terry and probably secondary Miles Bridges. We've got Brennan Marks at 1140. We've got Ira Kaufman at 1. More on the Hornets throughout today's game. But Matt Rhule said it right, finally, when it came to the offensive line. Next on Sports Radio FNZ.
Radio FNZ.
Sports Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson in. We've got so much to get to. We've talked a bit about the Charlotte Hornets in their latest loss here, but I have been hard on Matt Rhule. I don't know if you guys know this. I've had things to say about the things that Matt Rhule has said. I've gotten grumpy at the things that Matt Rhule has said. But the reality is there were, and I want to give some real credit because I don't know that I hit this enough yesterday. There were some real positives in the New Orleans loss on the individual level. Derrick Brown, I thought, had his best game in a long while. And it wasn't just his job in the pass rush. I thought he was really stout, too. Daquan Jones did a really good job as a disruptor in maybe the best performance we've seen from him. The young guys, Kenny Robinson in place of Justin Burris for most of that game. Frankie Luvu has quickly turned into one of those guys that I think could be part of the engine that drives the Panthers' defense going forward. I still think overall we maybe overrated the Panthers' defense and their performance on Sunday, because I think it was a good matchup, right? The Panthers have the speed to negate Alvin Kamara when it's just Alvin Kamara that you have to stop. They were going up against Taysom Hill, who is a bona fide, just dookie as a quarterback. And then you saw the Saints without a couple of their key offensive linemen and a couple other key offensive players. So I think they played well. Once you factor in that context, I think they played well. And I think they played well enough to win. I think they played as well as they have played in recent past. But it, to me, was the individual effort that did well. And now I want to commend Matt Rhule for finally saying what I've been saying for a year, what I think a lot of other people on this station have been saying for a minute, and what I think you, the fans, have known. And he was talking about where this organization is and what really needs to change going forward, and he was spot on.
I also think you have to make a true investment in the position, and I'm not saying we haven't. I'm just saying that, you know, obviously we all sit here and see we've made a lot of improvement on defense. We've made a lot of improvement, I feel like, in some of our special teams areas, some of them. You know, we have good skill players. We just have to continue to invest in the offensive line. Because when you have an offensive line that can run the ball and protect the quarterback, everything else just kind of eases up. And I don't want to throw that whole game on one position. You know, we had lots of opportunities. We dropped an interception. We gave up a 3rd and 13. Lots of things that could have changed the game. We didn't punt the ball well enough. But, you know, I think when we get this offseason, we'll look at everything.
So it took 16 games of where this team is for Matt Rhule to say we need a true investment in the offensive line. But I'm not going to focus on how long it took him. The thing I want to reward him on is on Sunday, he continued to try and pass along. Oh, 13 different combinations. 13 different combinations. Guys, that does matter. And every offensive lineman I've ever talked to, the best offensive lineman, when I used to talk to a guy like Joe Thomas, when he was at his peak in Cleveland, he always stressed to me and to anyone that would listen. It's not like we're best friends, but he would stress to me and anyone that would listen, chemistry goes a long way. An average offensive line can play above their head if you have chemistry. But he also would say, at the end of the day, an average offensive line, even with the best chemistry, can't be an elite offensive line. And if the Panthers are going to go for a run-based offense where the quarterback is secondary, you're going to need an elite offensive lineman. You're going to need elite offensive linemen in general. So kudos to Matt Rhule for admitting that this wasn't just about they've had a bunch of turnover on the offensive line. And the one thing that he omitted, because he didn't want to throw his organization under the bus, and I can empathize with that. I don't need him to come out here and say whether it's he didn't do a good enough job, that, you know, Scott Fitter didn't do enough good job, Dan Morgan. No, we're not blaming Danny. We like Dan here. We like all these guys. But they have never invested in Matt Rhule's 2 years in the offensive line significantly. The first year, it was very much a let's get through this year. That's what Russell Okung was. He was a 1 year, let's fix the, we're going to put off left tackle for a year, right? We're going to trade a younger right guard who was a Pro Bowl caliber player for that guy. Now, in fairness, that trade didn't work out for either team. Trey Turner was released by the Chargers. He's in Pittsburgh on a team that is a 500 team. But Russell Okung was a short-term move. Even going John Miller was a one-year deal. John Miller was supposed to be a stopgap at right guard. Keeping Matt Paradis around for another year or two was supposed to be a stopgap move. The real failure for the Panthers is they haven't drafted and developed well enough on the offensive line, right? 2 years ago, they went all defense in the draft. It's paid some dividends, but I don't know where they're yet defensively. And then this year, they drafted two guys who either couldn't beat out the slappies that they have, a la Big Boosie John Miller, a la Trent Scott, a la Dennis Daly, a la Pat Elflein. But they also, they tried to reshuffle the deck chairs in the Titanic here and get away with it for a second straight year. And you know that because of how they approached this position in free agency. They went for whoever would sign for the amount that they were willing to give at left tackle and left guard. They focused less on quality of the players, and they focused on who's available, who's willing to come in at this price point. And I understand why they did it. That allowed them to get Hassan Reddick on the deal that they got. That allowed them to give Denzel Perryman a bunch of money, which then they would, you know, he's in Las Vegas in a Pro Bowler now. But we're not talking about that. This allowed them to make the other moves that they've made. The problem is you can't skimp on an offensive line long term. I give full credit to Matt Rhule for saying it's time to make a true investment in the offensive line. The problem is you should have done that day one. If this was really going to be about Christian McCaffrey, if this offense was going to be a ground and pound, then it doesn't really make sense that you've gone with back-to-back stopgap lines. That's, to me, where all of a sudden the hierarchy and the business decisions of the Carolina Panthers need to be put a magnifying glass over it. If your goal really was to be a stout team in the trenches who can run the ball and play complementary football to an elite defense, at some point in the first 2 years, you should have taken a better stab at the offensive line. And listen, it's not just that they drafted two guys that they don't feel ready to trust. There are other guys who've stepped in. Trey Smith was taken after Deontay Brown. And Trey Smith has become one of the best right guards in the NFL in Tennessee. The guy's a monster. So would Trey Smith be starting here? I don't know. And I think that's the frustrating point here. We haven't seen the development happen, although I like what we see from Brady Christensen whenever he's in there. Even this last week, he had an awful, and I mean awful, assignment this last week against Shaq Barrett, or 2 weeks ago against Shaq Barrett. This week, it was Cam Jordan off the edge. He, talk about baptismal by fire, what Brady Christensen's going through. But yet they still don't trust him to go out there every day. It's about, oh, in the offseason you get better. In the offseason, well, if you knew that about Brady Christensen, then you should have taken a better stab at the offensive lineman. And I'll ask you guys, what to you constitutes a true investment in the Panthers' offensive line? Because for me, that's less about, oh, we've got to use the fifth pick or sixth pick, I think is where they currently sit. We have to use that on a left tackle. That would go a long way. Getting a left tackle in here who could, I don't know, block anybody, that would go a long way. But showing that there has been some sort of thought process on the offensive line, just showing any prioritization. They didn't prioritize the offensive line. They prioritized getting any two Jimmys or Joes to sign on the dotted line for the amount they wanted. I need to see. To me, a true investment in the offensive line is making it the focal point of this offseason. We went into last offseason, and I said the two biggest things that I care about that they have to ace, that they have to really think about and show us that they've done a good job executing, are the offensive line and quarterback. Well, the offensive line's got worse, and so did the quarterback. And this was why all summer long, listen, guys, this is not an I was right moment. But this was, I had several of you guys telling me I didn't know what the hell I was talking about when I warned you of the quarterback abyss, when I warned you about how bad this offensive line could be. And this is not for me to say I was right. This is right now, where we are right now with Sam Darnold coming off a meh performance in New Orleans, which still might be one of his best performances of his last seven games, given how god-awful he was, with an offensive line that is putrid. This was my greatest fear. My greatest fears about the Panthers have been realized, and I say that to say, now I need to see Matt Rhule and Scott Fitterer learn from their mistakes. If Matt Rhule's going to get a year three, don't just throw out a true investment in the offensive line, and then you don't go move heaven and earth to get an offensive lineman. Offensive linemen. I don't know that they need what Kansas City did. Kansas City got embarrassed in the Super Bowl and went out and said, you four schmoes, you're out. Here are four brand new starting offensive linemen, trading for Orlando Brown, drafting Creed Humphrey in the late second round, drafting Trey Smith, There was one other guy that they found. Oh, Joe Thuney. They traded for Joe Thuney, the longtime great guard of New England. I don't know it's that dire. I think Brady Christensen had some value. I think Taylor Moton obviously has value. I think on a short-term deal, I might be okay with Matt Paradis coming back. Even when it gets to the backups, I think Cam Irving, as a backup, doesn't concern me. Brings you good swing tackle versatility that you need in the NFL. I think Trent Scott, as a versatile offensive lineman, could step in if the other four starters are of good quality. The problem is, those guys have been your starters. So you can bring back four or five of the guys that you had, but you can really only bring back two or three of the starters. To me, a significant investment is that they move heaven and earth to go ahead and upgrade this offensive line. I don't know that they're going to be in a position that they can just keep the sixth pick or the fifth pick or wherever they end up. I don't know they're in a position that they can just sit on it and just take the best player available at five or six. They might need to trade down and accumulate picks, which would probably take them out of running for Ekwonu or Charles Cross and certainly Evan Neal. It's not just about the first-round pick. It's what can you do in trade and free agency to truly give this offensive line a chance to be better next year. 704-570-9610. What does a true investment in the offensive line mean? And we say goodbye next on Sports Radio FNZ. Sports Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson. We got Brennan Marks of The Athletic, UNC and Duke basketball reporter, going to be joining us in about 60 minutes here. Of course, we've got to talk about Duke's matchup tonight, UNC back on the hard court tomorrow. We've also got to get his thoughts on Sam Howell, Charlotte native, heading into the NFL draft. We'll get into that ourselves here in the next little bit. But last night, a frustrating night for Cleveland Browns fans, but a special night for Pittsburgh Steelers fans as they, on their last Monday Night Football game with Ben Roethlisberger, that is the expectation at least, they got the win over the Cleveland Browns to stay alive in the playoff hunt. And there's a lot to kind of get from this. I thought the Steelers giving Ben Roethlisberger at the end of the game one more touch, one more snap to kind of run out the clock, I thought that was a really nice touch. And it just reminds me of, you know, growing up a Browns fan, I hated the Steelers players. But the Pittsburgh Steelers organization is impossible to not respect. I don't know that I have a lot of personal respect for Ben Roethlisberger. We were in the MAC at the same time. I heard a lot of bad stories about Ben Roethlisberger. There was obviously the discretions early in his career. But yet, I can say things personally about Ben Roethlisberger of things I've heard or things that we all saw play out in real time, the motorcycle incident, or I could just tell you that I thought the Pittsburgh Steelers tried to handle this handoff as good as humanly possible. And, you know, for Cleveland, I have a lot to say about whatever the hell that was from the Browns last night. Allowing a quarterback out there with a torn labrum to go out there, and again, it's on his non-throwing shoulder, but the guy's wearing a harness. Allowing him to go out there and throw the ball 38 times, I thought it showed heart and guts by Baker Mayfield to play as well as he did in the second half, given the fact that, quite frankly, he was put out there to try and win the game by himself in the first half. And he had two interceptions. He had the blatant overthrow. He should have just dumped it off to Njoku, but he didn't. And then he had another kind of seemingly just overthrow, couldn't put the ball where he wanted it to. But the fact that they didn't run Nick Chubb, and by the way, don't run Nick Chubb. That's fine. If you want to save some tread on Nick Chubb, save some tread. You got D'Ernest Johnson right there. One of the best stories in the NFL. And my frustration with that game was it put Baker in an 0-1 situation, and it also took an opportunity to really reignite this rivalry. And that's really what Ben Roethlisberger is to the face of Cleveland fans. He's the face of disappointment. The Cleveland Browns could have drafted Ben Roethlisberger in 2004. Instead, they drafted Kellen Winslow II, who was another kind of immature player, and because of the Cleveland culture, things didn't go well. So they could have drafted Ben Roethlisberger. Then, early in his career, wins a Super Bowl. Then goes out there, and even though, like, the Ben that we saw yesterday is a pale imitation of the Ben that Cleveland fans are used to tormenting them, that's what Ben Roethlisberger did. I think Cleveland has, like, single-handed, maybe on two hands you can count the amount of wins Cleveland has over Ben Roethlisberger in the entirety of his time in Pittsburgh. And he's been there for 17 seasons. So, all of this being said, Pittsburgh didn't just show to be the better team yesterday. They proved again that they're just the better organization than Cleveland. Because Ben Roethlisberger had to throw the ball a lot last night. And the numbers aren't pretty. He was 24 of 46 for 123 yards, one touchdown, one interception. But they did a great job of using Najee Harris, who over the game wore down the Cleveland defense. And so Cleveland, injured quarterback, compromised arm, late in the season, probably shouldn't be playing right now considering that the season's basically over for Cleveland. They threw the ball 38 times. They ran the ball 20 times. And they didn't deploy their best running back. And nor did they deploy any help to the hapless rookie right tackle, fourth rounder, going up against maybe the best defender in the NFL in TJ Watt, who had four sacks last night. By the way, Charlotte's own Alex Highsmith getting two sacks as well. The Pittsburgh Steelers, they had to throw in certain points to try and keep that game going when Najee Harris wasn't having success early. But as the game went on, they started to run the ball more. And so Pittsburgh coaches, to me, won that game last night because they attacked the game with a physical manner we're used to the Pittsburgh Steelers attacking. The offensive line's still not very good. Ben did get sacked twice last night. It could have been a couple more sacks. But they continue to run the ball. They didn't over-leverage their 97-year-old quarterback. And I'll just ask you guys, what is Ben Roethlisberger's legacy in the NFL going to be? And I don't mean, I'm not trying to relitigate all the other stuff. Like, Ben Roethlisberger has overcome some very serious issues. There was the motorcycle issue. There was the sexual assault allegations. All of those things will be a part of the story of Ben Roethlisberger. But if you had told me when I was watching Ben Roethlisberger behind a bad offensive line, after the Steelers won that championship with Mike Tomlin, there were a couple years there where Ben Roethlisberger was getting teed off on. We're talking 50 times. We're talking 40 times, 42 times. There was a stretch run where Pittsburgh drafted the wrong offensive linemen, and even the guys that they were bringing in weren't good enough to play in front of Ben Roethlisberger. But yet somehow, as a 6'6", 245-pound, 260, 270-pound statue, he was able to withstand the punishment. And I think he should go down as the best quarterback in the history of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Shut!
I know everybody wants to give that to Terry Bradshaw. And Terry's a Hall of Famer. Give Terry his flowers. But Terry threw a lot of interceptions. I actually think Terry has more interceptions than he does touchdowns, or it's close. And Terry had Franco Harris for that run. Terry had the Steel Curtain for that run. Ben has had a lot of moving pieces. Those early Steelers teams were Jerome Bettis in the defense. Then there was the run of a pretty good defense, but you had Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell, which really got them nowhere. There were the years where he had no offensive line. There were years where sometimes they had a couple of those defenses from Pittsburgh were not the Steel Curtain kind of defenses. And Ben won in spite of those. So you add to it the fact that I think he won with a couple different style of teams. The fact that Mike Tomlin has literally never had a losing season, and Ben Roethlisberger deserves part of that, accomplishment. And then, let's just be honest. I know the last 3 years haven't gone the way they wanted to, specifically the end of last year and pretty much all this year for Big Ben. That guy was one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, not named Manning, not named Brady, from probably his fourth year in the NFL until about 4 years ago. That, to me, is what Ben Roethlisberger is, on top of the fact that he kicked the absolute dog crap out of the team I grew up rooting for a while. But I also think, like, we talk a lot about how the Carolina Panthers want to be built. Ben Roethlisberger, to me, was never one of the five best signal callers between the ears in the NFL. He was never one of the five best physical specimens in the NFL. I don't know that I would ever rank him as one of the five best quarterbacks in any given year that he was in. But cumulatively, he was a really, really good, great quarterback. And they continued to build around him every year. And even when they faltered, they were still competitive. I think that's doable. I think you can find a Ben Roethlisberger-type quarterback in the NFL draft. I know we want the Tom Brady's. I know we want the Peyton Mannings. Those guys are tough to find. And quite frankly, the Panthers have struggled to find anybody in between. But a quarterback of Roethlisberger, consistently somewhere between best quarterback and 10th best quarterback in the NFL and win Super Bowls, Ben Roethlisberger, that's something you can do, even if it might not look exactly the way Ben Roethlisberger is. So I'm judging Itty Bitty Fitty by your chot sound effect. You disagree with my take on Ben Roethlisberger.
I have lost so much respect for you as a known Browns fan and Steelers hater. This love fest of Ben Roethlisberger, he's a grade-A douchebag who has all of these statistics because he's played quarterback for 15 years. He is the Pittsburgh Aaron Rodgers. He's an overrated quarterback who wins in the regular season and fails in January and February. He's done nothing since he beat the Cardinals in the Super Bowl. Nothing.
No, that's not true. He's won a bunch of games. It's really tough for me to hear anyone sit one in Carolina and say that Ben Roethlisberger is overrated, because I would take the 14, 15-year run of Ben Roethlisberger over just about anything. From where he was from year 25 years old to 36 years old, 311 touchdowns, 147 interceptions. I'll take that. And I'll take it tomorrow without thinking about it. Now, if you wanted to say he was like Philip Rivers, that's the category that I put him in there with. Take the championships out there. I think he's more Philip Rivers than he is Tom Brady or Peyton Manning. And I'll also say, it takes some stones on you to be a Cowboys fan talking about somebody else having some regular season success and not some postseason success.
By Goma.
I agree. I agree, though. Ben Roethlisberger is a chotch, but he's won a bunch of games. 115, 58, and 1 in his career. What is the legacy of Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh? It stings to stay. It stings to compliment Ben Roethlisberger, but we must. It was a touching night in Pittsburgh. And while Pittsburgh says goodbye to one of their own, Tar Heel Nation says goodbye to one of theirs. Next on Sports Radio FNC.